I probably should not preach a message to you. Instead, I think I'm going to go ahead and ask that somebody in the room who has never in your life been hurt by anybody else, never had anything unjust done to you, never had anything, never been mistreated in any way, I'd like for you to go ahead and come on up and you give the message this morning. No takers? Okay. So, all right, well, how about the one of you who has never hurt anybody else? You've never treated anybody badly, you've never treated anybody unjustly, you know, you've never wounded somebody in your life. Why don't you go ahead and come on up and I will yield the pulpit to you. Okay, so, you know, it's a good thing none of you actually took me up on that. It's sort of risky, actually, because Jesus would have made a liar of you. You know, had you said, yeah, I've never hurt anybody. I've never hurt anybody really bad. I've never caused anybody pain. I've, you know, something like that. Jesus would have made a liar out of you. In Matthew chapter 17, verse 1, he made a statement to us that we all need to really get a hold of. He said, listen, he said, it is impossible for you to never offend or be offended. Now notice what he said there. He didn't say, you know, it is really, really hard. You've got to work really hard at it to not hurt anybody. No, he said it is impossible for you to live your life without ever hurting somebody. It is impossible for you to live your life without ever being hurt. So oftentimes, I think, though, we get in the middle of all that and we feel like, man, I just cannot believe that this happened to me. I can't believe this person did this to me. I can't believe this hurt came into my life. And we need to understand that is everybody's story. Now, please understand, Jesus was not excusing it. He was not condoning it. He wasn't saying, you know, it's okay for this person to have done this to you. He's not saying it's okay for you to have done this to somebody else. That's not at all. He was just simply stating a fact of living in this world. He said, you are a human being. And by the virtue of your humanity, it is impossible for you to live your life without ever being hurt or ever being hurt deeply. Now, please understand, we obviously know there are levels or degrees of pain. There are levels or degrees of hurts. But, you know, the context of this, because I know a lot of people would say, and some of you already, you're probably saying, well, yeah, okay, that may be true, but we're not talking about somebody who just sort of, you know, insulted me. We're not talking about somebody who cut me off in traffic. We're not talking about somebody who just hurt me a little bit. I'm talking about this. You don't know what really happened to me. Can I tell you the context of what Jesus was talking about here? He was actually referring to adults who hurt children. Now watch. Now, I doubt there's anybody in the room who would say there's anything more heinous in the world than that. I mean, that for us as human beings, that's the bottom. That's the bottom rung right there. That's the lowest of the low. That's what he was talking about. He went on to say, he said, though they're better, they would be better off having a millstone tied about their neck and be cast into the lake. So he wasn't talking about he said it's impossible for you to live your life without ever being seriously wounded. He wasn't passing this off as just a light thing, because I think that's the attitude we have. We say, okay, Pastor, I hear you say that, you know, everybody's hurt, but not like I am. Wait, Jesus said, there's not a child who's ever walked this earth that has not been hurt by somebody. Let that sink in a minute. See, there's not a child that's ever walked this earth that has not been hurt, that has not been treated unfairly. Like, I don't think there's a child who could ever go through a school experience without having something, you know, some pretty hurtful thing. If you're a child, we have a few children in here, we have teenagers, look, you're not alone. That's the point. Everybody. Now here is the point today. You see, because it's impossible for any of us to go through life, because every child has been hurt, when someone is hurt, they become broken. See, when we're hurt or offended by something, and I don't mean offended as in, you know, this modern thing, well, you know, your choice of pronouns offends me. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about being hurt, being wounded. When a child is hurt, that child is broken. And broken children become broken adults. And broken people break other people. And so the cycle continues. And that is where that is what's happened in our society. For 6,000 years of modern man's recorded history, people have been breaking other people. You follow me? That's why our society is the way it is. I know there's some of us, we look at it, we say, how could this possibly happen? How could this person do this unspeakable thing? I'll tell you how. Because a long time ago, sin entered the world, and death by sin. And that person became broken, and that person broke someone else, and that person broke. And for 6,000 years, people have been breaking people. Let me say it sort of this way. We don't create pain. We recycle pain. See, when somebody hurt you, they were just recycling what somebody else did to them. It may have taken a different form. It may have taken the same form. But it was the same thing. It was the same pain. The same pain that caused that person to offend you is the same pain that will cause you to hurt somebody else. And me to hurt somebody else. It's called sin. It's not mistakes. It's not bad judgment. It's called sin. We don't talk about that a lot anymore, you know, in churches. Don't talk a lot about sin anymore, but that's what the Bible word is. It means we have done something that is simply not right. But we did it because somebody else did it, and somebody else did it, and through society, through the years, this is what's happened. So it's societies are made from broken people hurting and breaking other people. Now, I wanted to share that with you before we get to our principles of the day. We're working through our 11 principles of hope. But it was important to lay that foundation before I now share with you what our principle of the day is. And today we're going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to go back, and Matt and I went to the old Delaware County Jail. Robert, it's the law library now. And so we went in there and we filmed just a short clip. I'm just going to show you part of it that introduces the principle of today.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around the bend,
country,
I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on.
Hello, everyone. We are standing inside the old Delaware County Jail, built in 1878. Principle number 7, which says this: unforgiveness is a prison you build around yourself. This old prison was built a long time ago, and yet it's still standing here and strong and well capable of keeping people locked inside. These iron bars are just as strong as the day they were put in, perhaps even stronger because of the tempering of time. In the same way, when someone hurts us or wrongs us, we are faced with a choice to forgive or to create a prison inside of our hearts and our minds to lock that person in. That means we keep them captive by refusing to forgive them. While it seems just and fair, even pleasurable at times, to keep someone locked in a prison of unforgiveness, what we don't realize is there's a great cost to that. That is, that every prison cell has to be guarded. And when we create the prison, we also become the guard.
Now, I'm going to develop that thought today. I was sitting here thinking, though, as I looked at that. All of you trolls out there who are listening to this message on our website, trying to find me, doing so, you should have been here today because you could have seen me behind bars where you think I belong. You losers. I wanted to give you that. I wanted to share with you that video. Let me go ahead and give you the principle of the day then. Here's the principle of the day. Unforgiveness. Now, before I even go any further, I totally understand some of you right now saying, I don't really want to hear anything else. I don't want to hear this message. I don't want to talk about unforgiveness. I know it's wrong. I know I should forgive. I get all that. Pastor, I don't know how. If I could, I would. I totally get that. Please know, I get it. I promise you I get it. But I promise you also that if you will just take that wall down for a few moments and let me share some thoughts. We're just going to chat this morning. Let me share some things with you from God, and I believe it can make a huge difference in your life. Here's the principle, but just let me share it with you, please. Unforgiveness is a prison that you build around yourself. I You know, everyone in this room is a master builder. You are an incredible architect, carpenter, welder, security specialist. You are exceptional at building a prison. But not just being able to build the prison, but we're also detectives. We know how to build cases against people. And we're amazing ferocious prosecutors that will go after a conviction. And we're also, you know, judge and the jury. And finally, our final position is we become the warden and guard of this prison that we have built. This prison may not be physical, but it is emotional, it is spiritual, it is also escape proof. Your prisoner cannot escape. You hold the only keys. You have the only keys, and only you can decide. Only you, no one else, can decide when that person is let out. When someone hurts us, okay, I've entitled this message, The Prison of the Unforgiven, and I messed that up. That should say The Prison of the Unforgiven, so would you all just please pretend like that's what it says. Now watch, if you work really hard at this, now watch, I'm going to show you some, here's God at work. Ready? I want you to do this. I want you to use your mental powers to change that word, because it's going to change here in just a second. It's going to say The Prison of the Unforgiven. Okay, maybe not. So, okay, well, it just went away. My bad. I asked her to do something. So, you see how my wife and I work together? It ends up like this all the time. Oh, look at that. Woo! Thank you very much. I'll be here all day. Prison of the Unforgiven. Now, seriously, when somebody hurts me, I can choose to not forgive them, and I can choose to lock them up in that prison, as I've been sort of illustrating. And I'm the only one who really controls what happens with that cell door. Now, I could give you all the scriptures that most of you already know if you've been in church very long at all. Let me just throw some up real quick. This is what you've always heard about unforgiveness. Ready? Matthew chapter number six. Here we go. Verse 14. Jesus said, "If you forgive men their offenses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive their offenses, neither will your Father forgive you." And verses like that are the ones that just sort of, this is why we don't want to hear a message like this. This is why we sit here and say, you know what, Pastor, I understand he said that, but you don't know my situation. I don't know your situation. I know what Jesus said. You know what Jesus said, and you don't want to hear this. And I totally understand. Hang on. Another passage, he said this. He said, Peter came to him and said, "Lord," see, Peter was trying to figure out. He said, okay, I know I'm supposed to forgive, but I mean, surely God, surely, Jesus, there's a point at which I don't have to keep forgiving this person, right? Surely there's a limit to where how far I have to go. He said, "Lord, how often can my brother," that means another person, "offend me and I forgive him? Seven times?" You know, so like if he does this seven times to me, can I? And Jesus said, "Not until seven times, 70 times seven." Now, he doesn't even just mean you have to stop at 490 times. He was using that as an illustration to say, it doesn't matter how many times. You always have to be willing. See, we look at that and we say, okay, that is so unrealistic. I'm really supposed to forgive somebody that keeps doing the same thing to me? Really? I mean, day after day. In fact, Peter went on. He this kind of wasn't good enough. So Peter said, you know, okay, what if it's like in the same day? You wives, keep your elbows to yourselves. So the next one. And if he offends you seven times in a day, like all in one day, and seven times in a day turns to you saying, "I'm sorry," you should forgive him. Look, see, we don't like this, do we? Because we say, okay, you know what? If he comes to me seven times in a day and says he's sorry, he doesn't mean it. Come on. If she does this same thing to me all the time and she always says, "I'm sorry," We do this to our kids, right? Our kids come and say, I'm sorry. And we say, you're not sorry. If you were sorry, you would do that. You wouldn't do that again. Right? We say it to our spouses. Say it to our boyfriends, girlfriends. We say to our friends, you know, well, if you were really sorry, you know, you wouldn't do that again. You wouldn't keep doing the same thing again. And I'm not going to argue that point. There's some truth in that. But it doesn't change what Jesus said, does it? So what in the world are we supposed to do? Because Jesus is telling us, watch, if you're sitting here today and there is somebody that you can't forgive and you can't move on and you think about what this person did to you constantly and you can't stop it, what do we do? The problem is that it almost seems like that's saying in our lives, that's not possible. Are you with me? But it is possible if we understand something this morning. And here's the good news now. Here's where I want to really encourage you. You see, we have this wrong understanding of what forgiveness means. For us, to forgive somebody means to release them from guilt. I don't mean them feeling guilty. I mean them being guilty. Hey, watch. For us, when we think of, we say, okay, I can't forgive this person because that's like saying they didn't do what they did. It's like saying it never happened. That's like saying they didn't hurt me the way that he or she did. It's like we're saying I release them from being guilty anymore. Please hear me. You don't have the power or the authority to release anybody from being guilty. You're forgiving that person has nothing to do with whether or not that person is still guilty. Now watch. So here's the point. I want you to get this statement. I've put up. See, if I forgive that person, we feel like if I forgive them, they get to go free and have no consequences. I can't forgive that person because I have to make sure they get the consequences they deserve. I have to. If I truly in my heart forgive you, that means you don't have to pay for what you did, or you don't have to face consequences of what you did. Let me give you a statement. Please, if you're writing things down, please write this down. Here it is. When we forgive someone, we are just transferring the responsibility for their consequences to God. Thank you. That's what forgiveness means. Forgiveness doesn't mean you didn't do that to me. Forgiveness doesn't mean I have to stop feeling hurt. Forgiveness doesn't mean that I have to act like you didn't do anything or say you just need to not worry about that anymore. Forgiveness is not saying it's like it never happened. It's not like saying you didn't hurt me the way that you did. Forgiveness is not me saying you are no longer guilty. Forgiveness is me saying I'm transferring the responsibility for what happens to you. God. That's what forgiveness is. You see, because until we do that, it still dominates our lives. You know, and this applies to husbands and wives. This applies to parents and children. This applies to friendships. This even applies to people who have left you through death. You'd be surprised how many people hurt over somebody who hurt them and then died. And we feel like, I don't even get the opportunity to hold them accountable. Listen to me. You are transferring the responsibility for what happens to them to God. That's what forgiveness really means. You see, even Jesus said it this way. That you say, well, I don't know about that. I don't know if I don't hold on to the responsibility here, I'm not sure that Jesus will do his job. You remember that passage I started with where Jesus said, he said, it is impossible that for you to not offend and for you to not be offended. He followed that up with saying, it were better for that person to have a millstone hung about his neck and be cast into the sea. That's what Jesus said. He was telling us, I will deal with them. Jesus will deal with them justly. See, we're not capable of that, are we, Lord? Our human nature is so sinful, isn't it, Kim? We don't know how to balance scales. We only know how to unbalance them the other way. All we know how to argue, the only way we know how to argue is to escalate. The only way we know how to, when somebody calls us a name, is call them a worse name. When somebody offends us, we just know how to offend them more. And we feel like that's justified. Right? Have you ever just balanced the scale in an argument? Of course not. Of course not. Because it gets personal. And so Jesus said, I will deal with them. See, the problem with the prison of unforgiven, now bring this down to where we live, even more so. The problem with the prison of the unforgiven is that there are always two full-time residents. There's an inmate, there's a guard. See, there's the person who's been put in there because they offended me, but I also have to guard them. I have to make sure they can't get out of that. I have to revisit that. And not only that, but I also have to watch everybody who comes in and tries to visit them. Now listen to me, please, this morning. See, we have to monitor who's talking to them. Because we don't want anybody else to be fooled by them. So we have to check out who they're talking to on Facebook. Boy, it's getting quiet in here. We have to make sure we get to anybody who we have as common acquaintances and make sure they know the truth. I need to tell you about this person. Because I don't want you to get hurt the way I did. In a faraway place, in a different time, in a small village, there were two boys who grew up as childhood best friends. I love that little dialogue between Cassie and Jocelyn. Cassie didn't know that was coming. I didn't know the details of it. Best friends are a wonderful thing. These two boys grew up in a village, and they were best friends. All through childhood, all through teen years, they did everything together. They were as close, closer than brothers. They became men. One became the town sheriff and magistrate and was in charge of all of that. And the other one opened up a saloon and was a very successful businessman in having a saloon. And a young lady came to this town who was beautiful, and they both almost instantly fell in love with her. You know this is going to turn out bad, right? Anytime a beautiful young girl gets involved, it always turns out bad. They both courted her. They both tried to win her. There came a day where she made her choice, and she chose the sheriff, the magistrate of the town. And the saloon owner went back and was so despondent, he ended up getting drunk, and in a drunken, jealous rage, killed the young lady. And the sheriff locked him up. As the magistrate sentenced him to life in prison, life in jail, and made sure he was going to stay there for the rest of his life. Locked him up, locked the cell door, kept the keys. As the years would go by, he did the same thing. He had always concerned about who might try to visit this guy, always concerned about whether this guy would escape. And he began, he would stay there during the course of the day and then go home. But after a while, he would go home and all he could think about is, I wonder if somebody's trying to break him out. I wonder if he's getting out. I wonder if he's still in there. And had to go back sometimes. Even before he could go to sleep, he'd have to go back to the jail and look in there and make sure the prisoner was still there. And it wasn't long before he couldn't even go home. He would stay later and later. Instead of 5 o'clock, he'd stay till 6 and 7 and 8. And after a while, he was staying all the way up until the prisoner was asleep, and he would go home, and all he would do is sleep at his home. And after a while, he couldn't stand it, and he just put a cot in the prison, and he slept there to make sure the prisoner couldn't escape. And the years became decades. And as the decades went by, these two men became old men. And eventually the prisoner died. And now the jailer, now the sheriff, wasn't even really sure what his purpose was now. Went out, and not knowing what else to do, he was going to go home. Went home and found his house had just fallen in. It was nothing but a pile of rubble. Everything that he once held dear, everything that was once important, all his possessions, they were all just destroyed. His parents were both dead. Family, all gone. What few friends there were in their old age, didn't even know him, had moved on, found other friends. The only thing he really knew to do was go back to the jail. Sit down on the cot, and he looked in and realized, you know, that bed that prisoner slept on all those years, so much better than this cot. Spent the rest of his life sleeping in the same jail cell that he had put there for someone else. Now, what is the point? What does that look like today? If we decide that we're going to open up a prison of the unforgiven, that is our future. Not physically, but in here and in here, we're constantly having to worry about whether or not this person is getting out, whether this person is paying for what he's done, whether this person, we're reliving that moment and that hurt, whatever it was. It could have been a childhood hurt. Could have been childhood abuse. Very serious, very heinous, very horrible. And lots of people carry that with them and relive that over and now are in their 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s still with a prisoner in there, constantly having to worry about whether or not, I wonder if justice has been done. I have to make sure they can't get out because the only way I know how to do this. And in our hearts, we've still got this prison for the unforgiven. People try to visit you now and say, come on, just, you need to, and I know we look at them and we think, you don't understand because they say things like, you need to let that go. You need to move on. You don't understand. No. Only somebody who's been through what you've been through understands. But I also know that what you're doing is you're holding on to the responsibility for that person's consequences. You're still the guard. You're still the jailer. You're holding on to that as if you have to be the one to make sure that that person gets what he deserves. And that is totally understandable. I'm just proposing to you today that you say, God, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of this person always still in my thoughts. I'm tired of this person. These memories always drive me, always, they come into everything. I can't watch a TV show. I can't listen to a message at church. I can't talk to a friend. I can't hear a news story about this happening. I can't do any of this thing without all this coming back to me, and I've got to hold on to this. And I'm tired, God. Could you maybe say, God, I'm done. I know you will make sure justice is done. And I want you to take responsibility for what happened. I want you to take the responsibility for the consequences to this person who did this to me. Your spouse has broken your trust. And by the way, if you're sitting here today and infidelity has come into your marriage or into the boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, I want you to know that you are not alone. You think you're alone. You're not alone. You're not alone. What number is that? That's the current number of couples in our ministry that I am currently ministering through in Fidelity. On a regular basis. Those are the ones who have come to me. And please, come to me. Come to somebody. It doesn't have to be like that. Sometimes there's nothing that can be done. But I want you to know your marriage does not have to be over. I said your marriage does not have to be over. But one of the biggest holdbacks to that is this thing of unforgiveness. Now please know, saying to somebody who has recently found out that their spouse has been unfaithful, to say to them, you need to forgive, that is not something I'm not even talking to you today. Please know that. Because that is too fresh, too raw, too painful, and I get that. But if it happened a while ago, you're still married, but you haven't forgiven yet, I'm telling you it is time for you to take these keys and give them to Jesus. Stop carrying them around. It is time for you to stop holding on to the responsibility to make sure that your spouse or that person your spouse was with is held accountable for that. God will do that. And you say, well, boy, that's just harsh. You know, and I've been hurt. And I know you've been hurt. I know you've been hurt. But I'm telling you that everybody who's ever walked this face of this earth has been broken by somebody, including your spouse, including that person who was with your spouse. They were broken because somebody else was broken, because for 6,000 years this thing has been building what happened to your marriage. For 6,000 years, Satan has had the opportunity to do this and this and this and orchestrate all this to bring people to a point where they're so broken that they do broken things. Now it's really quiet. And that's okay. It's okay. See, you what does it look like today? So when that happens, you're constantly looking to see who's visiting the jail cell. You're constantly looking at their Facebook page. You're constantly looking at their phone. You're constantly looking at this. You're constantly, there's this element of trust that you decide, well, I have to make sure. I have to make sure my spouse. I got to watch everything they do. I got to watch everybody who talks to them. Could you not just, aren't you tired? Isn't it time to say, Jesus, please take the responsibility for the consequences for that? I promise you, you will feel freer than you've ever felt in your life. Isn't it a heavy burden that you're carrying? Isn't it such a heavy burden to keep carrying that? To keep living in the prison? So you won't smile and laugh at dinner because that's like saying it's okay. You won't come home and be happy and play with the kids. You won't enjoy a movie together. You won't do that because that's like saying it's okay. No, it's never, you never have to say it was okay. You don't ever have to say it was okay. And their guilt will never leave them. And I'm talking about both kinds of guilt now. The guilt they feel will never leave them. You say, well, they don't act like it. You have no idea how somebody feels based on how they act. No idea. We all put on. We're all phony in that way. But you have no idea. You have no idea what's going on inside them. But the guilt they feel will last forever, and the fact that they're guilty is still there, even if you say, God, I just don't want to carry the responsibility anymore for their consequences. And I'm just going to give it to you. You do what's fair. You do what's right. Oh, wait. Do you not trust God? Do you not think that God is capable of being just? If I turn this over to God, Pastor, I don't think he'll do to them what they need. Pastor, if I do what this stupid thing you're talking about this morning, I never said I was a smart guy. I know you know more than I do. I know that. I'm just telling you what God said. He knows more than you do. If I do what you're saying, Pastor, then I just don't think he'll give them what they deserve. You know, he probably won't. He won't give you what you deserve either. Thank God. I don't want what I deserve. I don't want what I deserve. I'm glad we have a merciful God. See, he said, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay. And what he means by that, he doesn't just mean I'm going to get them, although he will. He also means I'll repay you. You've been hurt. I'll heal you. You've been betrayed. I'll be your faithful friend. You have had this hurt come into your life. I will heal you. I'll make something good come into your life because of the bad that's come into your life. I know how to do that, God's saying. I can repay that. Do you trust him? Do you trust him? Do you trust him to fix this and take the responsibility for the consequences, or are you better at it than God? I'm trying to help you. I love you with all my heart. I hate to see some of you just keep living in pain every day of your lives. You keep living in this agony. You can't enjoy the people right in front of you because you're sitting in a jail and they're off living their lives. Your family says, please come back to us. Dad, please come. Your children are saying, Dad, please come home to us. And you say, I can't. Because I've got to make sure justice is done. I got to make sure this person gets what he deserves. She's got to get what she deserves. Give that up to God. Let God take care of those consequences. Go back to your family. Love that person in front of you. Love those people God put in your life before it's too late and they're no longer there for you. God wants to take that from you. I know you went to a church years ago and the pastor hurt you. You know what? If you stay here long enough, it's going to happen here. Because I'm broken too. And I'm going to break you somehow. And I don't want to. And I would do anything to not do that. But I'm not going to be able to help it because Jesus said it's impossible. It's impossible for a pastor not to hurt people. It's impossible for a church not to hurt a pastor. It's going to happen. But he said, let me take responsibility for the consequences. Don't blame every church. Don't blame every Christian for what happened to you. Forgiving somebody. Let me give you another statement here. Please get this. Forgiving someone is not relieving them of guiltiness. It is relieving yourself of the responsibility for their consequences. Let him take care of it. Let him have it. Let him be the guard. Let him be the warden. Let him be the one who decides how long they stay and what their consequences. Just let him have it and walk away. Walk away. And go back to your home. Go back to your family. Go back to your friend. Come in here and play cards with us. Well, I can't do that because my life, the things going on in my life, I just don't want to be around people. Hey, you need to be around people. Be with the people who love you. Rick, I love you so much for what you said to me this morning. I guess there's some things came out yesterday morning. Talk about friendships, real friendships. What a difference it makes when we find a place where people love us. It's not relieving somebody who hurts you of their guiltiness. They will be guilty regardless of what you do. But it's relieving yourself of the responsibility for their consequences. Do you trust God? See, Jesus said, I'm wrapping this up now. I know it's a little bit late. I'm sorry. Jesus said, I came to set the captives free. He wasn't talking just about your prisoner. He's talking about you. He's talking about you. He said, I came to set you free. Let me set you free. Let me take from you the responsibility for what happens to them. You go free. You live again. Love your spouse again. Love your children again. Children, love your parents again. Let them go. Let them free. If they've hurt you, you are not the only one. And if you were hurt as a child, please, with all the love that I have inside of me, please understand this. The statute of limitations has run out on that. It is time for you to say, God, I give you the keys. I'm out of here. I'm going to live my life with joy. I'm going to be with the people who I have in my life right now. And I'm going to make the most out of every minute that I have with them. And I'm going to stop living with that thing that happened to me years ago. Or even weeks ago. Stop letting the offender control your life. I want to encourage you. Mauricio, would you come here, please? This is a set of old keys, just symbolic. I want to encourage you during this invitation. I want you to come and get a key from Mauricio. Not the key. That'd be stealing. Those belong to me. Seriously. Set your pride aside. Set everything else aside. And come to Mauricio and take a key from him. And get at this altar, as some people are already on. And say, God, I've been holding this key and I've been guarding this jail cell for so long. I'm tired. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be the one responsible. I want to give this to you, God, and you decide what happens to them, and you decide what happens to me. And when you have done that with the Lord, you take that key and you give it back to Mauricio as if you're giving it to God and say, I am done. I am done. I forgive that person. God will take care of what happens after that. You don't have to do it anymore. Use explain.